This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Folks, there's been a lot of conversation around this constitutional convention, the process, the structure, the makeup, and we're lucky to have Ron Fauché join as political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. I said earlier he posted an op-ed piece in NOLA.com about this. He's been around a long time. He's studied the process. He's participated in the process. He understands the process like no other. And Ron, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Newell. Happy to be here.
I didn't mean to age you, Ron, but you have been around a while, and you've seen a lot of things happen, both at the federal level, the state level, the local level. How surprised are you about this proposed process of this constitutional convention?
Well, there's a few things that are different. Number one, when we had the last constitutional convention, which was almost 50 years ago now, there was a lot of public outcry that the existing constitution, which was at the time, I believe, the longest of any state in the country, and one of the longest, if not the longest, of any democracy in the world, that had been amended many, many times, was outdated, needed to be changed. And there was a sense of that. In the 1970 elections, which occurred right before the election when Edwin Edwards and Bennett Johnston were running for governor, the voters killed all the constitutional amendments on the ballot. There was, I think, roughly 50 of them. Don't hold me to that number, but it was a lot. And voters killed them all. And so there was a desire for change and a desire for a new constitution that we just don't see or feel right now. So that's one big difference. The other big difference is when that constitution was put together, delegates were elected to that convention by state house districts. So you had 105 delegates, and people were voting for delegates knowing that they would be delegates to the Constitutional Convention, and that's all they would be doing, as opposed to having legislators do it or whatever. Now, legislators could run for the convention, but they have to specifically be elected. And then the governor had 27 appointments. In this particular case, the legislators are going to be delegates, and that means that the people who are delegates, all of them, of that group, will be people who are seeking re-election, you know, to their job in a couple of years after. So that's one change in dynamic. The other change in dynamic was, in the current plan that Governor Landry's forces have proposed, the governor would have 27 appointments to the convention as delegates, which is the same amount that Edwin Edwards was given back in 1973. The difference is that you add that to the 144 legislators who would have delegate positions. And the vast majority of the current legislature is aligned with the governor. And so, you know, you add 27 gubernatorial appointments to legislative bodies that are over two to one Republican and strongly aligned with Landry. In effect, you're giving the governor, you know, virtual control of the process. Now, even though Edwin Edwards had an influence on the process last time, he generally stayed hands off on it, except for a few things. And Bubba Henry, who was the chairman of the Constitutional Convention, and I might may add, did a great job with it. You know, handled the mechanics of it, the day to day, and Henry was a pretty independent political force in his own right. So that's a long answer, but it sort of explains the differences between this Constitutional Convention and the last one. And one other difference is that there was a lot of time to deliberate in the convention over a year, almost 50 years ago. But this Constitutional Convention, they really have it on a fast track, where as soon as this legislative session's over with, they would have a Constitutional Convention, and not giving it a whole lot of time, and then it could go on the ballot. So there's a lot of differences between this one and the last one.
Interestingly, we've been, a month or month and a half down the road now since this chatter about this convention started, and yet the administration has not revealed what amendments to the existing state constitution that they have a desire to move to revise statute.
My guess is that they won't. And the reason is once they get into that, you know, figuring out what ingredients make up the gumbo here, you're going to get a lot of public complaint. So my guess is they won't have a new constitution put together until the Constitutional Convention begins. They would probably unveil a draft at that point. And one thing you just said is important. It's likely that whatever is not put in the new constitution would be put into state law. So somebody couldn't say, well, if you vote for the new constitution, you're abolishing the homestead exemption, let's say. Because they would say, no, it could still be in state law. The difference is that even though it still would be in state law, it would be easier for the legislature to repeal that law than it would be to amend the Constitution to take it out.
And there's no talk about a supermajority vote being required maybe to repeal or amend when they move it to a revised statute, where, you know, my big difficulty is, and I think you will agree with this, one of the reasons we have a lot of amendments to the state constitution is because there's no trust. And folks are getting tired of having to go to the state legislature every year and having members leverage what's, you know, in these amendments if they get removed against, you know, them holding them up to vote on other issues. And so a lot of folks kind of move in a very fast pace to amending the state constitution because they're tired of being browbeat by legislators.
Well, I think that's true. And you know, and there's two reasons to put something in a state constitution. One is to give it protection. You know, the homestead exemption was put in the state constitution specifically to make it difficult to get rid of it. The minimum foundation program, that is the mechanism that determines how public schools are funded in the Louisiana, was deliberately put in the Constitution to make it difficult to change it or to take it out for some political reason. So you're right about that. And, you know, and there are valid reasons back and forth on what should be and what shouldn't be in a state constitution. And on some of these things, you know, there's really no right or wrong. It's the question of, you know, which side are you on? You know, and as I said in the piece, you know, where you sit determines where you stand on something like this. So, So if you can get something in the Constitution, you're better off because it's protected, and you don't have to go to the legislature every year to keep protecting it.
And part of the problem is that we can point to hundreds, if not thousands, of examples of less than judicious behavior by our elected legislators in the kind of cavalier, whimsical way in which they deal with a lot of these pieces of legislation that can be very harmful to members of the public.
Sure. And that's always possible. And that's one of the reasons why people like to put things in the Constitution. And of course, keep in mind, if you are going to amend the Constitution, you always need a vote of the people. So ultimately, you have to sell it to the voters, or if not, you have to keep the opposition down where they don't hear anything negative about it, which is what's been the case in years past.
Let's focus on that for a moment. I mean, obviously, my opinion is the approach that we've taken thus far is not really an attempt, I think, to gain public trust by any stretch of the imagination. I think, to the contrary, people are probably more skeptical about what is actually happening. It's kind of interesting to me because in the end of this process, the public has to vote on all of these measures, right?
That's right. And if you do put a new constitution on the ballot, you're going to have an election, and voters are going to have to approve it. And one of the, you see, my guess is that the political strategy that the governor's people are following is that let's move this very quickly and let's get this passed, this constitutional convention, as fast as we can, because the longer we spend on it, the more likely it will be that some controversies would start taking root. You know, do you want the homestead exemption in the Constitution? Do you want funding of public education in the Constitution? The mayors and local officials, do they want home rule powers and in the authority to raise revenues in the Constitution or in the statute books? I mean, all these things can come up. And so before all that takes root, they're hoping to get it done and to get it on the ballot. The problem they have there is, and I don't know to what extent they've thought this through, is, you know, it's easier to kill something, a ballot issue, than it is to pass it. And that's always been pretty much the case in Louisiana and anywhere in the United States. And if there's public doubt about the process or the product of the Constitution they put forward, then it very well could go down to defeat. So you know, it's an important balancing act here. You know, on the one hand, they can push it as fast as they want to if they've got the votes in the legislature to do it. But if they push it too fast and it starts looking like it's being rushed or railroaded or whatever, and a lot of controversies are being hidden, then it could cause a lot of public concern about it. And then when the public has doubts about something like that, they usually vote it down.
You don't think that they're crazy enough to move the homestead exemption to revise statute, do you? I mean, it would seem to me, I mean, that's been a death knell issue for decades now.
I mean, well, my guess is
I don't see that changing.
I'm talking about the public sentiment.
I mean, I don't see it changing.
Well, that right there could kill the whole thing. But my guess is, you see, in theory, what they want to do with the Constitution is to make it lean and short, and for it to just be a framework to determine, you know, the branches of government, what powers they have, and individual rights, and those sorts of things. And if you follow that philosophy as purely as they're talking about, then things like the homestead exemption would be taken out of the Constitution. Now, I don't think the legislators who will be voting in that constitutional convention would vote to do that. So as a practical matter, even though they want to take a lot of things out of the Constitution, you will ultimately find that based on the political strength of the constituency supporting keeping some things in the Constitution, the convention just may not be able to do it. And if that happens, then what's the use of writing a new Constitution if all those specific things that they want to take out are left in? So you know, from a logical argument, it gets very difficult to defend what they would do as long as we don't know what they will do. And at this stage of the game, we really don't know what they would do.
You know, the interesting thing, and where this really gets complex, and the only reason I know it is because I served as the tax collector, when you talk about local governance, right, you mentioned it with the LMA and others being concerned about whether or not they're going to be able to preserve home rule charter, you know, governance and things of that nature. And what a lot of folks it gets to be a pretty complex issue, right, for when you think about it, but more so in the taxing world, because the state's allowed to tax more activities than local government is, even though local government bears the brunt of a lot of the intrusive activities. And it's going to be interesting to see how this weighs out and how this balances out. And I get a sense that there's going to be a move to give the state more expansive powers in that realm, and less for local government. When you just look at the ITEP and the governor remove the job requirement, you know, when you think about a manufacturer that comes here, we've given away the property tax. Manufacturers are exempt from sales taxes. I talked to some state legislators and they didn't even realize that. And I said, now you've taken the jobs. They have nothing to comply with. And they're not paying for literally anything. And, you know, so when I look at that and I look where we're headed down this path, this could be a real dangerous, slippery slope for local government. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that's true. And I think because of that, you would see mayors and sheriffs and district attorneys and council members from around the state looking very hard at what they would be doing here and lobbying very hard, you know, what they would be doing. And if they do start pulling out some of those protections, then they will work very hard to kill the new Constitution when it comes up for a ballot. So, you know, the issues you point there are real issues. And again, the way the legislature could solve the problem is just to keep the status quo, you know, keep all these things in the Constitution. And as I asked before, if you're going to do all that, why do you need a new Constitution?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. We got, what, 200-plus amendments to the state Constitution? Is that right?
Yeah, about 216. Yeah.
216. If you remove 30, you know, I mean, how do you define success? And you know, I mean, you go through the exercise for what? For the sake of the exercise? I don't get exactly, because there's been no clear delineation by this administration in the end. What is it in the totality of circumstances that you're trying to accomplish, right? Going back
right.
to as you define the framework so eloquently, it's like we're getting nada, nothing. And here we are. We're on the cusp of this. What are we, about potentially 6 weeks away from from this thing starting?
And if it gets through the legislature,
and we know nothing.
the other thing, the alternative the legislature would have would be, instead of rewriting the whole Constitution, they could just propose an amendment to the Constitution that would clean up some of the, you know, what commonly believed to be too many specifics in the Constitution, particularly in Article 7, which is the revenue and finance section. And then they could take that, put that on the ballot, and you're not opening Pandora's box for all the rest of the articles of the Constitution to be put on the block.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to, I don't know. I think when you take, this is obviously in the realm of the political world and governance, this is about as big as it gets, right? I mean.
It is. This is it.
And I just, I get the sense and I feel this kind of, I don't know, Ron, this minimization of this process. It's no big deal. We're going to move that to revised statutes and everything's going to be hunky-dory. Well, not really.
It may not be that way. I mean, that may be their intention, and maybe they have the control over the legislature to actually do that. I don't know that they do.
What about the next governor, the next administration?
Well, that's right.
The next speaker, the next president of the Senate, you know? I mean, I'm sure you're like me. I don't like being held hostage to one's whims.
No. And that's why people want to put things in constitutions. So the whim of the day, the political slogan of the day, doesn't knock something out that some years later people will say, wait a minute, we should have had that. We should have kept that. So you're right. And that's what a constitution is about.
Yeah, I just hope folks get really involved and start asking.
Well, people need to watch this. You know, people really need to watch this. This isn't just a bill or some technical thing. If they, launch an actual constitutional convention, everything is on the table. And one thing that I'll point out is, compared to 50 years ago, the last time we had this process, you didn't have national interest groups for everything loaded with money who would have the ability to come to the state and to pour money into campaigns in the state to affect this and to put things in the Constitution that they want. Does Louisiana want to become a battleground for these national issues?
Absolutely. And they all have a 5-star rating system, right? And it's questioning how many stars we're going to get. How about no stars and we just do this right? Ron Fauché, as always, enjoy your opinion on these matters. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great week. All right, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Eric Hessler, attorney from Pano. The New Orleans Police Department announced that they received a $3+ million grant, 3.3 to be exact, as a result of the efforts of Representative Troy Carter. A good thing. But one of the things that was revealed in a most recent article posted by WWL-TV is that the NOPD says the crime lab will not be fully operational until the fall of 2027, which is more than 3 years out. And here joining us is Eric Hessler, attorney with Pano. Eric, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Noel. How are you?
Welcome news about the money. It seems to me this date keeps getting pushed back. Am I incorrect there?
Well, I mean, I would have thought the same thing, and I did some research, asked around. I'm certainly not even close to being a DNA expert, nor am I smart enough to be one. But the people that I've talked to, including people at the crime lab, kind of educated me on how much work needs to be done just to get it up and running and it accredited. It's a pretty serious task they have ahead of them, but I think the team that they have together is really, really facing it well and actively putting it together.
So I guess the question is, do we know whether or not, and I've tried to find the answer to this, whether or not we have the DNA equipment in place in the crime lab as it stands today?
My understanding is that the majority of the equipment is actually installed or being installed. It's been purchased, but it takes calibration. It takes persons to run it. You know, it's not like, you know, it's very serious.
Look, I started one. I understand the process. I mean, typically it's about a year once you've got the equipment in place. You can validate the stuff. There are two, you know, accreditation boards that you have to kind of go to, one ANAB or the ANSI National Accreditation Board, as well as the QAS, I think it's called, with the FBI relative to CODIS, submissions. But I mean, you're talking 3.5 years from today right now.
And as I said, I'm certainly not an expert in that area. I was told that the majority of that time is going to be setting up the equipment, calibrating the equipment, training people, writing policies. I mean, they're starting from the ground up, from what I understand it. And I know Dr. Kelly and the captain over there, one of the things they did that I think was very smart thing to do, the captain has a degree in molecular biology, which before, you know, the place was kind of like a dumping ground for Rank. They just send Rank there to punish him because nobody really put much effort, unfortunately, or money into the crime lab, and that's a shame. But certainly they're taking it much, much more seriously, and they should, and I think we're going to see a very, very good product come out of it.
Are we aware of how many accreditations they actually have? I think they're firearms accredited. Do we know whether or not in any of the other disciplines other than DNA, if they've reached accreditation status?
I don't know. I think they are in firearms, and I think they're in the process of getting an accredited latent print examiner.
Yeah. So, obviously, you and your members understand the importance of a fully functioning, robust crime lab. Is it still a little bit of the impediment that it has been for a number of years?
It's certainly, you know, they have to send everything off to Baton Rouge to Louisiana State Police, who's been very helpful.
In the DNA world.
Yes, sir.
Are they doing the other? They doing additional submissions to?
No. Mainly just DNA.
Right.
Things that require that type of examination, but no, they are doing ballistics in house. They enter everything in NIB, and they do all the comparisons there. They do latent prints, drug testing, et cetera. It's just the DNA that's still being sent out.
Eric, I don't know if you had it. Let's pivot real quick. The opportunity to read an article that was posted this morning in NOLAN.com about violent crime is plummeting in New Orleans so far in 2024. Here's why. They went through a lot of explanations in this article about, this holistic approach, this, that, and everything else. And it kind of occurs to me, the DA weighed in with risk terrain modeling, which is nothing more than evidence-based, and intelligence-led policing, in my view. I know when we start looking at these things, they had about 600 people in the jail. Now they're at their near or at capacity. You know, what's interesting to me is that nobody ever really spends a lot of time talking about the great work the NOPD has done. We're just selectively incapacitating more impact criminals. And that seems to be the most obvious reason why, crime's gone down.
Looking at the national trends, we always do have these cycles. But the men and women of the NOPD they're always out there. They're committed. They're doing their best to combat crime and lower crime. And really, the biggest impediment oftentimes is government. And I think over the last year or so, the police department's becoming a little more proactive and getting out there and doing the task of fighting crime and being present. So I think that's impacting it for sure.
Well, when you look at, the homicide solution rate alone, the fact that a lot of the more current homicides have been solved with an arrest, obviously, we got to get it through prosecution now, but those type of things, when you have apprehensions happening more real time, they have an impact because killers are killers. I mean, you know how that works out on the street.
Right.
Those that have that propensity, because it's determinative by the nature of the killing, obviously, a non-domestic, so to speak. There's a high likelihood they're going to kill again.
Yeah, and then, as you said, once you get make that apprehension, that's obviously a violent criminal off the street. A person that's of that nature tends to repeat as long as they're able to do so while on the street. Some of the domestic violence stuff we have, that's not going to be able to be stopped by police patrols, et cetera. But the arrest and detention of violent criminals, that certainly helps. And a proactive presence on the street where persons that are armed and looking to cause harm to somebody will think twice about being so brazen, at the very least, if they believe they might get stopped and patted down and frisked if they were acting suspiciously.
Yeah, it's interesting when we talk about this holistic approach to public safety. We talk about funding a lot of different programs. I get it. I understand it. I just wish a lot of our public officials would take a deeper dive and call it for what it is. We're selectively incapacitating impact criminals, plain and simple.
And that's what the police should be doing. The other programs are fine, and those they should be funded and worked on. But the police fundamental job is to be on the streets encountering and deterring violent criminals.
Plain and simple. That's how I like to try to make as many issues as possible. Eric, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate your time, your insight. Eric Hessler, attorney for Pano. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk lounge. JM, you're up. What say you?
Hi, how are you, sir?
Good, and you?
That's fine. I wanted to compliment you and Mr. Fauché for a very insightful discussion about constitutional conventions by a governor who does not want to outline what his plans are because he wants to keep them what he wants them to be and not what the people would want them. That same thing is true with the article in the Times-Picayune over the weekend with Mr. LePere and the other gentleman and your former legislative assistant, which was Danny Martini, who got the bill passed that you all wanted to get, and it was not a liberal bill to begin with. It was a good, conservative, bipartisan bill that you all worked very hard to get passed. And I just wanted to compliment you for an intelligent discussion.
Well, thank you, JM. I appreciate it. We try to do so. In fact, I had J.P. Morrell on the other day, and he kind of privately thanked me for having an intelligent debate. And, it's okay. We can disagree on things, and we can treat each other with respect, and we can talk about the issues and point out the obvious in a lot of cases. Do you get the same feeling, J.M., that I get, that there's an attempt to try and minimize this whole thing as to what's happening, and that's why I ask Ron the question, this is big, right, when you do a constitutional reformation project like this. Do you get that same feel?
I get the same feeling that you did, and just Mr. Fauché explained it correctly. You all are contemporaries of mine. I'm in my mid-70s, okay? And I find that the politics of today are vengeance politics and not compromise, which is the way it should be. That's what it's been for years. When he explained how Bubba Henry ran the Constitutional Convention the last time, it was after Edwards and Bennett Johnston had their political governor battles. And so all of those things were things of legislative momentum. And today, it's more they want to keep it in the shadows. They want to spend $3 million to send National Guardsmen to Texas to help them out when they should be using the $3 million in the state of Louisiana.
Well, I'm going to part with you there, JM, and I'll tell you why. That was as a part of the EMAC process. They have helped us in the past. And when they ask, if you don't respond, we will not get assistance any longer. So that's kind of a give and take. I mean, I understand ideologically people are going to part with the mission, but there's more to that story. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
And the same thing is true, as he was saying, with the Foundation for Education. There's more, and the articles in the paper over the weekend were perfect examples of what they're talking about. These religious schools that are nothing more than the economic ministers that are running them, and instead of getting good education, it's funneling more money. You went to a private school. I sent my kids to a private school. I paid my taxes. The education was on top. I didn't get any vouchers to pay for it. But at the same token, while that's reasonable, it's still not correct. And these are why these things are held in the dark until it's too late to do anything about it. And that's what they're doing with the Constitutional Convention. It's not a collaborative compromise. It is, I'm going to hide this stuff, and then it's going to disappear, and there won't be time to foment any kind of opposition. I just think that's wrong, and I think that's what the intelligent people like yourself and Mr. Fauché are saying. We're not trying to hide these things. Debate them in public. Have meaningful discussions. Compromise. If you got to compromise something, Mr. LePere and the other gentleman that was mentioned in the paper, and Danny Martini is an excellent example. He worked through the legislative process all those years, and they didn't put forth a liberal bill. They put forth a bipartisan bill that could get past the legislature and meet the needs of what we had to do.
And not unlike any other bill, every now and again, you recognize it has some warts, and you just treat the warts. JM, thank you so much for the call. Truly appreciate it. Call your legislators. Let them know how you feel. We'll be right back to see what Scoot has coming your way when we return. Stay with us. Scoot's up next, and he joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, for once, we will not be talking about the eclipse. We'll talk about whether or not the party should be able to ban reporters that report negatively about them.
All right. Scoot's up next, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you again in the morning.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.